OU will get it in and take one last shot if they want it. Uzan across the midcourt stripe. He won't even attempt a shot. The final 3 seconds drip off the clock, and you can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win. Kansas sweeps the Sooners out the Big 12 doors.
Stop the presses. KU wins a road game in the Big 12. We'll talk more about that coming up here in just a little bit. Plus, K-State men and women had a doubleheader at home at Bramlage, and you couldn't have the opposite spectrums of a result for a day. The K-State men losing in the final seconds, the K-State women winning in the final seconds. Plus, the Royals make a trade for a relief pitcher and give up maybe quite a bit for that guy. And All-Star Weekend in Indianapolis and NBA, why it was a complete bummer. And the Daytona 500 scheduled for today, as you just heard, after the weather ruined things over the weekend. And could, and the key word to this question is could, Andy Reid end up being the greatest of all time? All the talk about who's the greatest quarterback of all time. Maybe Mahomes should play more than 6 or 7 years before we can actually declare him the GOAT. Although, Chiefs fans, I understand that you could say he's the GOAT through the first 6 years as a starter. That is true. But to be the GOAT, you have to finish your career. So that's why it's kind of premature. But Andy Reid's a lot closer to the end of his career than Patrick Mahomes is, at least you would think. So perhaps we should be talking more about, if we're going to talk about a GOAT, maybe we should be talking about Andy Reid more so than Patrick Mahomes. We'll explain a little bit more coming up here on The Ticket. All right, wrestling. We got some state qualifiers. Got sub-state basketball for 1A. We know the bracket's set for that and much more, so we'll hand it off to Dusty.
Yes, the 3-2-1A regional wrestling tournament held over the weekend. 10 immediate area athletes have qualified for state there at 3-2-1A. Southeast Saline Regional, Brogan Monty of Beloit won the championship at 113 pounds. He beat A.J. Almanza of Lions by fall in 255 in the title bout. 215 pounds, Brody Boudreaux of Beloit finished second and qualified for state, while Alec Huck of Sylvan Lucas finished second at 190 pounds and qualified for state as well. So those are the three from Southeast that made it. And then at 3-2-1A Regional in Norton, we had seven area athletes that are headed to state. Smith Center's Luke Franklin at 190, Eli Franklin at 215, and Carson Montgomery at 285, all finished in second place. Parker Hutchinson, a fourth place finish at 150 for the Redmen, and Gannon McCoy finished in fourth at 157, ended up losing to Osborne's Caden Schultz in that third place match there at 157. So Schultz is headed to state for the second straight year. Made it as a freshman last year for Osborne. He's back as a sophomore this year. And then Grant Middleton of Lakeside also headed back for the Knights here this year after making it as a freshman last year. He qualified at 215 again this year after a fourth place finish on Saturday there in Norton. So again, 10 total from the immediate area that have qualified for state, the three Concordia wrestlers that have qualified in 4A, and as far as NTKSports.com was concerned, there were 30 area wrestlers that qualified for state, and you can read all about that at the website at NTKSports.com, and you can also find all the results from the regional tournaments there. The Beloit Trojans had five wrestlers that made it to the what you would call the blood round, right, or the heartbreak round, the last match there. If you win it, you make it to state. If you lose, you don't. And all five of those wrestlers, unfortunately, came up a little bit short there. We'll talk about the wrestling regionals on our wrestling locker room chats coming up tomorrow night with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center beginning around 5:15. So be listening for that. We'll recap the regional tournament and get you ready for state, which actually starts on Thursday this year. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, three-day state tournament coming up for those wrestlers that qualified here this weekend. As Wade said, also the 1A sub-state basketball brackets have been released. You can find those at ncksports.com. As far as our area teams are concerned, 1A Division 1, most of them will be at Rock Hills. Frankfort and Osborne have the number 1 and 2 seeds on the girls' side. And then on the boys' side, it is Osborne and Clifton Clyde. Boys' games will be Thursday. Rock Hills is at Lakeside Thursday, and then Washington County at Frankfort. And then on Friday, the Rock Hills girls will host Washington County. The Lakeside girls go to Clifton Clyde. And then 1A Division 1 girls, Solomon. Sylvan Lucas is the number 2 seed. They'll host Rural Vista on Friday. And on the boys' side, Sylvan's the number 2 seed as well. They'll host Wakefield on Thursday. St. John's Tipton has the number 1 seed in both girls and boys, 1A Division 2 at Stafford. And then Thunder Ridge girls have the number 2 seed. The Colby Golden Plains Regional, they'll host Natoma on Friday. Thunder Ridge will on the girls' side, and the Thunder Ridge boys on Thursday will go to Rexford to face Golden Plains. So that's a look at what's going on as far as the brackets are are concerned, or the matchups, I should say. I don't have time to go through all the brackets, but you can, again, find all those at ncksports.com with the 1A sub-state brackets. The rest of the classes in our area, 2 and 3A, will be released coming up on Wednesday after Tuesday night's games. So always be looking there for the latest in local sports, ncksports.com.
All right, you mentioned the makeup games tonight.
Concordia's at Chapman tonight in a makeup game.
We'll have basketball tomorrow night. We'll have Beloit at Smith Center, girls and boys doubleheader on KD Country 94 and on Z96.3 Lake Osborne, Beer Rock Hills. And we'll have sub-state basketball for you. One game on Thursday, one game on Friday on KD Country 94. And then we'll get into full-fledged sub-state play the week after that throughout the week, and hopefully have some teams to cover at state basketball competitions later on in the month of March. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive, your home for fast, friendly auto repair there in Beloit. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. When your vehicle has a problem or needs maintenance, Kiever Brothers is your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Whether you need tires, brakes, batteries, belts, hoses, air conditioning, a transmission, engine, or just an oil change, there's only one thing you need to remember. We fix everything. Kiever Brothers Automotive delivers fast, friendly auto repair, and we fix everything. Find us just south the courthouse in Beloit and online at KieferBrothers.com.
And we should all mention that Bryce Beisner went over 1,000 points in his career on Friday night in the Beloit boys' win over Minneapolis. The Beloit girls sharing a league title after losing to Minneapolis tonight. Still got to share the title. Beloit boys' undefeated league title. So all of that you can find at ncksports.com. All right, Kansas wins. Number 6, Kansas picks up a big road victory at number 25, Oklahoma. They trailed by 11 in the first half, came back within 5 at halftime, end up winning the ball game by 10. Kevin McCullough returned. He was pretty rusty shooting the ball, but definitely is a presence on the floor. 10 points, 8 rebounds. Hunter Dickinson had a pretty good game. 20 points, 16 rebounds. Jarnay Furphy, 15. DeJuan Harris added 11. KU finally getting a road win in the Big 12. They're now 2-5 on the road in the Big 12. And Bill Self on the defense in the win at OU.
I don't know if we turned it up. I'll be honest. I thought we just were pretty sound defensively. I'd be real tired. To me, it looked like it was two tired teams playing majority of the game. And I know we are, and I'm sure that OU is as well. But I thought that from an efficiency standpoint, I thought defensively and offensively we were much better the second half, and they were better the first half. The key was when we got to 11-5 at halftime. To me, that was the biggest stretch of the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I think Kansas had to feel very fortunate to only down 5 at halftime. And they go on to come back and win at Oklahoma on the road. So KU will not play here in the middle of the week. They finally got a bit of a break. And they'll get prepared for Texas at home on Saturday. And then they'll host BYU on Tuesday. Two winnable games. Of course, they're always winnable for KU when they're at home at Allen Fieldhouse. And then the tough stretch at Baylor. Host K-State at Houston. Some people would say K-State's not a tough, but it's still a rivalry game, even though it will be in Lawrence. So there's no doubt the two tough games on the schedule at Baylor, at Houston. Kansas needed to win that to have any outside chance of maybe getting a share of the Big 12 title. But nothing really. The biggest thing is just to have confidence they can win a game on the road, which they were able to do. Now, for K-State, not such good news at the end of their game.
3 seconds. Nelson!
It was a heck of a tough shot by Jameer Nelson Jr. I'm so old, I remember senior, and he was a hell of a player.
Yeah.
But junior hits a tough, tough shot. Jamie Dixon's out of the game. Things were going so badly on that play, he was about to call another timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you look at that game with Kansas State, you know, it was a kind of a tale of different parts of the game, because K-State was up 8 a couple times. Then all of a sudden, they're down 10, 18-2 run by TCU, and then they fight back. And then they had no business tying the game. I mean, they had no business doing that. I mean, first of all, there was a foul that was a bailout. You know, I did see somebody post, if K-State's going to complain about officiating, should they complain about the one that bails them out? because there was a few calls that went K-State's way at the end. Then a turnover on TCU gave K-State a chance to tie the game, and they did. So TCU and a call that went K-State's way, and then TCU making the turnover certainly gave K-State new lease on life. And if it went to overtime, we know what happens. K-State wins. Jerome Tang, K-State didn't lose in overtime. But Nelson hit the three, and that might be that might be the dagger for K-State's tournament hopes right there, unless they can win the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City.
Yeah, I don't think they were going even if they won that game. So,
I know, yeah, but technically they were still in pretty decent shape. Yeah. Not great shape, but decent shape to make a run now.
That's exactly what I said, though, at the end of the game when I snapped to some of my buddies. I was like, well, goodbye NCAA tournament for sure. I mean, that's can't be losing these games at home that they've lost.
For sure, I wouldn't go that far because you could win the NCAA. They could in Kansas City. This Big 12 is, I mean, I'm not sitting here telling you there's a dominant team. Iowa State's good. Houston's good. Kansas isn't as good as they once were. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised one of these years that some team has no business winning the tournament does. And, you know, K-State's shown that they, you know, they beat Kansas, but it was at home. I mean, I don't think Kansas State's going to win the tournament either. I agree with you. But for sure, I don't know if we can say for sure, when you can technically, you know, win a tournament in 1 week. And we've seen teams that, I guarantee you, people said they weren't going to a tournament for sure.
Yeah.
And guess what? They did. Just like lots of Chiefs fans. Oh, we're not going to make it to the Super Bowl for sure. And they were dead wrong. So I'm just telling you, they do have a – I have seen teams do this many times over the years, and I think you have too, where once you get to the end of the regular season and you go into the postseason tournament, you have a new lease on life. From this standpoint, you're 0-0 again. Like, if you know you're not going to make the tournament, you've got nothing to lose but to put it all out there in a 3-4 day tournament and get it done and punch your ticket. That's one good thing about, and I'm not a big fan of, you have a great year as a and win the conference outright over the course of 3 months, but then you don't get the automatic bid. I'm not a big fan of that. You and I have talked about that. At the same time, I am a fan of it does give teams a second chance in a way, and it gives a team like your K-State Wildcats a chance to reset and recoup and try to make a run in 1 week to make the tournament. Whereas if we went the way you want to run it, the way I want to run it, and that is, hey, you win your conference regular season, that's much tougher to do. You're the automatic bid, automatic qualifier. Now, if you want to go ahead and have your conference tournament and say that there's a qualifier there too, you're going to have to expand the field because you can't do that with 68 teams because you could have a whole bunch of different teams that win the regular season title winning the conference tournament title. So I understand why they do it because – you're not going to, they don't want to, I think, expand the tournament to 96 teams, although there's been talk about that, and I would hate to see it. And so if you're against that expansion, then you should probably just go along with the crowd here and say, yeah, your conference tournament should be the automatic qualifier. Because if there is nothing on the line for you and you can't get an automatic bid, why are teams, like, if K-State goes in the Big 12 tournament knowing they don't have an automatic bid, what's their motivation to even play that hard and finish out the season? There is none. So I'm kind of arguing with you and me, oddly enough, and arguing myself a little bit, that that's the reason it's there, is that everybody gets a chance to reset. You have a new lease on life. Now, the Power 5 conferences...
Yeah, my issue isn't with the conferences like the Big 12.
Right. Right. But at the same time, if you apply...
There was one year where it was an issue when Georgia did it, you know, in the SEC, right?
But if you apply that to the smaller conferences, you have the same issue. You have the same issue. And that is, if you reward the conference champion of the American Athletic Conference, okay, or the Ohio Valley, okay, and they're the automatic qualifier, there's no point in having conference tournament.
Exactly.
And they want conference tournaments because that makes money for the conference.
And I have always understood why they do what they do, right? Like, I just don't like it. I just don't like the fact that on one side, it's your body of work that gets you into the tournament.
Right.
And then on the other side, for the automatic bid, it's what did you do in 4 days?
Yeah, you can be 8-16.
That's my issue with because all the at-large teams have to use a body of work has always been my issue.
And I agree with you.
Yeah.
At the same time, I understand why they do it.
Absolutely,
because otherwise, there'd be no point in having conference.
Yeah, I'm not naive. I know why they do it.
Sure.
But it's just like a lot of stuff with the NCAA. They're talking out of both sides of their mouth, right? Like,
well, listen, Georgia had a losing record and made it 1 year. If they can do it, why can't K-State do it?
Yeah.
They're, and And I'd argue go back then. I'd have to look at who was the best in the SEC, but I bet you they had a team just as good as Houston at the top of their conference, if not better, that year. So I when you say for sure, I say, I know you feel pretty confident they're not going to make it.
Technicality, that's not the correct term, yes. But I'm still going to say for sure. Yeah. They're not making these.
I had lots of Chiefs fans tell me over and over, week in and week out,
this team don't have Patrick
there's
Mahomes.
No way this team's going to win the Super Bowl.
This team don't have Marquise Noel.
Yeah, well, just, yeah. This Big 12 isn't as – the Big 12 that's is good, but it's not – there is no dominant team at the top.
There's not, but it's still the toughest conference in America.
It is.
And I don't see this K-State team going through the toughest conference in America at the tournament and winning it. That's the only way right now.
They just got to get hot for a few days. And then, hey, if they – I don't know what seed they would be, but let's say they're the 10 seed. Okay, you beat a 7. Okay, and the two, and then I guess the two gets a bye, don't they? Now, how does it work this year? It's different this year.
I would guess teams. They're just adding the two games, so you're playing.
You got 14, so 1 and 2 would have a bye.
Yeah.
Okay, so the two's not going to get upset. Yeah. So okay.
I would guess what if
K-State's the 11 though? Okay, so K-State's the 11. Like they beat the 6, and then the three seed gets upset by the worst team. Oklahoma State pulls off the upset over the 3 seed, if that's how the bracket goes, because 14 teams, right? So if it's 14 would play 3, okay, 1 and 2 would get a bye. I don't have the bracket in front of me.
Uh-huh.
1 and 2 would get a bye, and then everybody else would play. So my scenario here is Oklahoma State just beat BYU by double digits, and BYU is ranked in the top 20. Okay, I know it was at Stillwater, but if Kansas State is even 11 and they beat the 6, then they play the 14.
They should have lost to you twice this year.
Right. But what I'm saying is the door opens,
yeah,
is my point. All it takes is you sit here and you say, well, the Big 12 is so, so tough. Yeah, but the tournament might not be as tough as you think if there's an upset or two. You
sure.
know, I mean, Oklahoma State can say the same thing K-State can say. If we get hot, we automatically get
sure.
in. I mean, and sometimes the higher seeds do get knocked off in these tournaments because they don't have as much motivation, you know. But the Big 12, for the most part, it does seem like the last so many years, it's been one of the top seeds that's won it. But there's always that outlier that can happen. Mark it down. I'm not predicting K-State wins the tournament, people. But remember this conversation. If we're previewing a Big 12 title game for K-State in Kansas City, and Dusty said for sure. So if it's for sure, you should take all your money that you have and put it down against K-State to not make the tournament. That's what Dusty's telling you.
I feel pretty confident in it.
I'm just having fun.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
I
it would be fun to come back on you on that one, though.
I would take all.
You
of
would.
It.
You would. You
because
would
be, you know what?
I mean, you'd be happy.
My
to be
team would have made the tournament.
Right,
I don't care if you want to come on.
That's
and
right.
Come down hard
be,
on me.
You'd be happy with
it's
being
like any
wrong.
Time that I pick K-State to not have success and they win.
Yeah.
I mean, it works for me, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't care how much you know. Excess crap I get for that.
Yeah, well, I would love to give you some crap about it, just like I give a lot of Chiefs fans that gave up on the Chiefs a lot of crap. I was trying to tell them at the end of the regular season. People told me I was crazy. Well, guess what? You were the ones that weren't knowing what you talking about. Here's Jerome Tang. He credits TCU with the win.
Big time shot by a big time player, and you know, in games like this, players have to make plays, and he did. So credit to them. They're 20-8 on the offensive glass. You know, like, we couldn't overcome that, and especially when we don't shoot the ball well. And all that's a credit to TCU. They did a great job.
Tyler Perry led the way with 24. Okay, you know what? Here, I'll do this live on the air. We're on the air. Can you call us later? Thank you. Okay, there's a thing called voicemail. And when somebody calls, and this person called like four times in a row and just keeps, you know, back, first of like all, there's a reason why the phone's not being answered, because one, either somebody's busy or there is voicemail. So feel free or call back. I don't know. Wait a good 10 or 15 minutes, which that will not work with our show right now. But that would be a better chance.
At least you've waited instead
at least.
Of just.
Yes. Yes.
in succession 7, 8, 9 times or whatever.
I know whatever it was they were calling about, it was the most important thing in the world. But I'm sorry, I'm just having a little bit of fun with it, but it is annoying and irritating. Like, I'm happy to take your phone call, but if it's not, we have the thing called voicemail, or you can call back later, but don't call 3 times in a row back to back to back. Okay, I guess it worked. I picked up, but guess what? It was quick and it was done. Because I don't have time to take any kind of things and requests while we're actually on the air, which means I know those people are not listening to us on the
exactly,
air when they're calling
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
Just a little behind-the-scenes stuff here at the radio station. I'm sure that's happened to other people at businesses, too, as well. I'm sure it's happened at the bank, you know. Somebody calls, and they just keep calling, like, you know, I am waiting on customers in the drive-through teller lane, and I just can't really answer it right now.
I have a coach that'll call, you know, he won't answer.
Yeah, so
I'll wait
just
like
calls
maybe
over.
10 minutes, you know, and then maybe try to call back after
what
that.
What is wrong with you? You call 10 seconds.
Because I know I have like a area of time that I'm supposed to call them.
Right.
But I don't just call and then call right back.
What is wrong with you? You're supposed to redial immediately over and over until they finally pick up. And I'm sure they'll feel really good about that, right?
Yeah.
They're going to be really happy when they answer, much like I was. Okay, so now that we have all that cleared up, K-State's back on the court tonight on the road at 16-9, 5-7 Texas. Texas got blown out by Houston on Saturday, 82-61. 8 o'clock tip tonight for K-State, who, they've got to start winning some games, obviously. Houston, with their win over Texas, they're in a tie at the top of the Big 12 standings at 9-3 with Iowa State. Iowa State won at home over Texas Tech on Saturday. Iowa State's ranked 10th in the country. Houston's 3rd, and got a showdown tonight. Houston, Iowa State in Houston. It's a big Monday on ESPN, 8 o'clock, and the winner of that has the inside track to win the Big 12. Wow. I think a lot of people thought Houston would be in that position, but not Iowa State. Number 12, yeah. Baylor won at West Virginia, 94-81. Oklahoma State won by 10 over number 19, BYU, and Cincinnati edged Central Florida by 2. Yesterday, Wichita State lost on the road, 72-61 against Charlotte, and the Shockers now 10-16 overall, 2-11 in the AAC. So we talked about it as a doubleheader in Manhattan for the K-State men and women. The men played, what was it, tip-off time at 11, and the men lost in the final seconds. Then the women played at 4 o'clock, and the women win in the final seconds.
Burns, Euro step for the tie. We are tied. K-State into Sundell. Sundell ahead to Jalen Blades. He's got it. K-State beats the pressure. Blades with the layup, and they lead it with 2.6. And that will do it.
What a crazy ending to that game. How do you let somebody get behind your defense completely like that is beyond me. But I don't know if Central Florida is celebrating a little bit since they had tied it. Whatever the case may be, K-State without Ayuka Lee, who sprained her ankle. She just can't catch a break. She was out of the game. So Eliza Maupin came in, had 15 off the bench. Gabby Gregory, 19. K-State women, 22-4, 11-3 in the Big 12. And they had to have that game to have any chance to win a Big 12 title. So that was a big win for the K-State women. And hopefully get Lee back and healthy here very soon. And then the KU women won their 5th in a row. So they're starting to come on. You know, they got off to a rough start this year, but they're starting to play much better. They're now 8-6 in the Big 12, 15-10, and trying to make a run to get into the NCAA tournament. Baseball news. The Royals acquired right-handed reliever John Schwarber from Boston. In return, the Royals sent minor league starter David Sandlin, their 19th prospect, to the Red Sox. General Manager J.J. Piccolo said, "We've been trying to continue to address the bullpen, and we wanted somebody who had been in some high-leverage situations before. We were really, really happy with our reports, real happy with the data we have on him." Schreiber gives the Royals another high-leverage arm as they continue remaking their bullpen from last season. Parting with Sandlin, selected by the Royals in the 11th round of the 2022 Major League Baseball draft out of Oklahoma, it stings because he's a young arm with strikeout stuff, 90 strikeouts and 68 minor league innings. But with Schreiber, the Royals are also getting 3 years of control, including this year. I remember Sandlin was absolutely fantastic for Oklahoma in regionals, and maybe even I think they might have made a College World Series a couple years ago. So he's a very talented pitcher. But the Royals get a 29-year-old guy. He had an ERA of 3.86 last year, 53 strikeouts and 46 appearances in 46 innings. But here's the key part. He began the year with a 2.12 ERA in his first 18 appearances. Then he got hurt with a lat strain. He missed a little over 2 months. He returned, And in his appearances following the injury, he wasn't quite the same guy. ERA of 4.85. This spring, though, he's once again healthy. So when he's fully healthy, he was really good last year. His career is pretty solid. He's only 29. And I think the bigger thing here is it's not a rental for 1 year. He's under control for 2 years beyond this. So the Royals, there's no doubt about it. They have remade that bullpen. And they've picked up two bona fide starting pitchers. And they've got a bat they picked up at Hunter Renfroe that they like. And then Adam Frazier brings them some utility mixed with the young guys. And there's no reason not to be excited about the Royals this year.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lose sleep about getting rid of a prospect because apparently they can't develop them
starting
right now anyway. So
right.
Because they're signing all these guys in this offseason because they didn't have guys that could step into the rotation. So
yes.
Maybe that'll be better down the line here with some different guys that are maybe in some different roles with this team. But yeah, it's you always look at that and you're like, well, maybe you're mortgaging the future for your rotation.
Right.
But it's like, well. We did. Jackson Kowar was supposed to be part of that, and he was one of the trades that the Royals made over the offseason to get the guy from Atlanta. So, yeah, it's just like, yeah, I'm not overly worried about it.
Over the span,
let's just say that.
Over the span of about 22 years, the Royals have developed, I can do it on one hand, the starting pitchers. Zach Greinke, Danny Duffy, Brady Singer, and your Donovan Turo is still a work in progress.
Yeah.
But maybe you could put that's four. That's it. One every 6 years. The odds aren't good that Sandlin's going to be great with the Royals. Now, what will happen is he'll be a bona fide ace with the Red Sox.
He'll go to Boston and
absolutely,
you know, in that big market, he's going to thrive, and we're going to be talking about him in the postseason.
And we say, well, if he stayed KC, it's like, yeah, if he stayed KC, he probably would have been a fifth starter.
Yeah.
NBA All-Star Weekend, Indianapolis. I don't know if you watch any of this, but the NBA All-Star game, the All-Star Weekend has become a big fat joke. And I think the league should be embarrassed by it, quite frankly. I know they won't because people still shell out money. But the only good thing about the All-Star Weekend was something that Kenny Smith screwed up and pooped on. And I don't even think he realized he did. That's how... I'm gonna go over a few things here with the NBA All-Star Game weekend. Maybe a lot of people around here don't care so much, and that's fine. And I'll try not to spend much time on it because I want to talk about Andy Reid and whether or not he'll end up being the greatest coach of all time because I think that would be an interesting conversation. They had the Rising Stars game on Friday. I didn't even know, and hardly anybody knows that game took place Friday. Why is that being played on Friday? I have no idea.
I don't know. They've always done that, and it doesn't make any sense.
Because that's younger talent, so forth and so on. So Saturday, All-Star Saturday night's, you know, supposed to be the big thing, right? And so they had some skills competition. Pacer players won it. It's not that exciting. And they had the three-point competition, which is my favorite part of the whole thing. The dunk competition's just not what it once was at all. And the three-point competition, you know, was pretty good and interesting, and Damian Lillard won that. And then the best thing, honestly, and I was looking forward to, and they promoted it the right way, it was a battle of the sexes. It was Sabrina Ionescu from the New York Liberty, who set a record at last year's All-Star game for the WNBA, where she made like 25 out of 26 three-point attempts. Insane. And of course, the women in the WNBA shoot closer than the men in the NBA. And then the women shoot with a smaller ball than the men do. And so, anyway, Steph Curry congratulated her, so forth and so on. And then they talked a little bit of trash on one another, apparently, and there became a challenge. And my son said this yesterday, my oldest son, who knows basketball inside and out, and he's a three-point shooter himself, and he says, why in the world did Steph Curry do that? I said, I think it's awesome that Steph Curry did that. Because here's the thing. You know why the dunk contest sucks? Because none of the star players want to do it. Either they're afraid of losing or they're afraid of getting hurt. And the dunk contest doesn't have any names in it. Whereas this little battle between Sabrina Ionescu and Stephen Curry was a huge thing and probably the biggest thing for most people to talk about because it's Steph Curry. You know, would it be any, if it's Bradley Beal, would it really set this thing off? No.
No, it's the best three-point shooter of all time
against the best three-point shooter in women's basketball in the WNBA and Ionescu, who had set a record, men or women, in a three-point competition. And so she agreed to, or wanted to, shoot from the NBA line, but she was using the women's ball. And so she shoots first, and she makes 9 out of her first 10. Did you watch this?
Yeah, I did. I watched all the Saturday night stuff.
Yeah, well, that was a waste of your full time. But anyway.
I had a DVR that I buzzed right through.
Okay, there you go. We did too. We did the same thing.
Yeah.
So 9 of 10. She was red hot. She couldn't miss. Then she missed a few. She scored 26 from the men's line with the women's ball, which was just as good a score as what anybody put up in the three-point competition that Dame Lillard won.
Yes.
He had 26. She had 26. So then Steph goes out there and misses a few early. Then he got hot late, and he had to get hot, as he said, to win. He had 29. And during this competition, Kenny Smith, I like Kenny Smith. In fact, I mean, I don't think Kenny Smith sometimes just talks to talk, and it's like, dude, we're not that stupid. You know, like we understand basketball. But Kenny Smith's a nice guy. He's done a lot of good things, and I have no problem with Kenny Smith at all. And I love him and Barkley on Inside NBA. Shaq, sometimes I can't understand what he's saying. He mumbles half the time. But then sometimes Shaq is funny. But they've won tons of awards, and Kenny Smith is good. I like Kenny Smith. I do. I don't think him and Barkley should be doing college basketball tournament studio coverage at all, because they know the pros, and college, you can tell they don't.
Yeah.
But Kenny Smith doesn't know anything about the WNBA either. And Kenny Smith knows nothing about Sabrina Ionescu. And Kenny Smith apparently doesn't know anything about the history of dunkers. Or he was drinking heavily. I don't know what was going on with Kenny Smith the other night, but it was embarrassing. And Sue Bird pointed out something very interesting. The commentators are Kevin Harlan, does a great job, Reggie Miller, and Kenny Smith. And Sue Bird said, why didn't they have a woman doing this women's versus Steph Curry versus Sabrina Ionescu, at least for that competition? Why wasn't there a woman commentating? Because Candace Parker was there.
Yeah.
And she's not a three-point expert, but she's highly respected. She's a WNBA star. She's won championships, a great collegiate player at Tennessee. And I'm sitting here wondering the same thing. Even when this was going on, I'm like, why is it all guys calling this? And then Kenny Smith, this was all about, you know, women getting better, WNBA becoming more popular. I mean, you got Caitlin Clark in college. It's renovating the rejuvenating college basketball, no doubt, which we'll talk about another moronic person with a microphone that said something about Caitlin Clark over the weekend here in a moment. So Kenny Smith is talking about Ionescu, who she didn't get blown out. It was close.
Yeah.
And he keeps going on about how she should have shot from the women's line. And Reggie Miller's the guy of reason, like,
yeah, which is kind of weird,
right? and it's like, Kenny, you do know that in WNBA they shoot further back beyond the 3-point line, right? You do know this, right? So somebody put a whole bunch of highlights out there showing Ionescu shooting from well beyond the men's line and drilling stuff in games.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then he said something about, well, she should do what she does in the women's game. And Reggie Miller's like, well, she's playing with a smaller ball. Well, she should be at the closer line. What you're basically saying, I know this sounds, you're going to say, what do you mean basically saying? Yeah, women should stay in the kitchen. I mean, it comes across poorly.
It was bad.
It was bad.
The moment.
I was cringing, and he kept talking about it.
The first time he said it, I was like, oh no, Kenny.
Yeah, shut up now.
That's not it, man.
And he kept going.
She was doing real fine and lost to the best three-point shooter of all time.
She scored as many as anybody else in the competition that was won.
And they made that comment, like, 26 is the number right after she finished. And it's like, then he said that, and I'm like, and then he kept going. I'm like, oh no.
He kept going on and on about it,
Kenny.
Why did he keep going on? Then he said. Then they somehow started talking about dolls. It was embarrassing for the NBA.
Bad.
It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. This is supposed to be building up women, and Sabrina Ionescu did fantastic in this competition. I was cheering for her to win. And, you know, my oldest says, well, why Steph Curry put himself in that position? He could have lost. It's like, I love that he did that. More NBA players need to follow Steph Curry's lead and say, I want to be in the skills competition. I want to play hard in the NBA All-Star game. I want to be in the dunk competition. Steph Curry put himself out there because he could have lost. And then you know what would have happened? People would have said he lost on purpose because people are into conspiracy theories.
Because
you would never want to give a woman credit, right, in today's sexist society that we live in. And by the way, it was more sexist maybe in previous generations, but there's still a lot of sexism out there. And Kenny Smith's comments come across as sexist. To me, right away, I'm cringing. And I'm not a woman. I'm cringing. Like the first time he said, oh dear God, Kenny. And then he kept going on and on about it. Then they started talking about dolls. I'm like, what are you guys doing? you are absolutely, in a roundabout way, belittling the whole big thing that this was built up to be, which was the best thing about All-Star Saturday night. The best shooter in the WNBA going up against the best shooter of all time, and she was right there with him, neck and neck, would have been in the championship of the men's three-point competition. Although you would come back with, well, she used the women's ball. I bet you if she had time to shoot with the men's ball, she'd do just as fine. She would be fine. And I'm just sitting here and I'm going, dear Lord, what in the world are these guys doing? It was embarrassing. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Well, then at the end of it, he said something that's not even true because he's like, there's men's and women's tees for a reason.
Oh, yes.
And I'm like,
he said that
that's
too.
That's not even real.
That's not even correct.
I mean, see, that's what people normally take it as, but that's not exactly what they're called, obviously.
I'm glad that you brought that up because he said the women's and men's tees. Kenny Smith, you don't know jack crap about golf because, by the way, a lot of people that golf a lot also don't know
they
as much about golf as they
sure,
think.
Yeah.
They say women's tees and men's tees, and they say men's tees are the back, and the women's tees are the closest. And usually what happens when you go to golf courses that have five sets of tee markers, you always say the closest one is the women's tee. That is incorrect. These are tees, these tee markers, where you tee off on a hole on any golf course, is based on your handicap.
Yeah.
It is not based on gender. Whoever started all that, did all that, whatever, that is not how it is.
And I don't even know a lot about golf, but I know that part.
But Kenny Smith don't.
Yeah.
And which came across another sexist comment. Let me tell you something. I've played in groups with women that hit the ball just as well as I do off the tee. And they play just as well as I do. They have the same handicap or better. And if you are a beginning golfer, the last place you should go is to the middle tee. You should be hitting from the so-called women's tees, which is not what they are. You should go to the front tee because you're just learning. So then you look like a complete idiot when you go back, oh, I'm a manly man. Yeah. And you go back to the tips. You go to the deepest, furthest away tee box, and you can't even hit it past the so-called women's tee box. Why don't you just hit it where it lies? That would be the women's tee box. No, that would be the beginner's tee box where you should have been driving the ball to start with. It is not the women's tee box. It is the handicap tee boxes. If you're a beginner, you should be at the very front. The closest to the green you can get, that's where you should be hitting your drive.
Yes.
That is where you should be. Then if you're and I don't have it in front of me, but it's based on handicaps. Okay, so then if you're maybe you're a little better than beginner, you know, the easiest way would be if you have three tee boxes. Your first tee box is for your beginners, women or men, kids or adults, whatever. Your middle tee box is your intermediate. That's where pretty much everybody else should be. Your intermediate are your hacks like me that can hit the ball off the tee all right, okay golfer, but not a pro. And the only people that should be hitting from the tips are the big hitters that are actually pretty decent. So you really should go from outstanding golfers from the tips, the back. The middle should be basically your middle class golfers, which would be me. And then your front should be maybe Dusty. If he doesn't play, he should be hitting from the very front.
Can I get closer than that?
Right. Is there a tee box in front of this tee box? No, that is the women's tee box. Or no, wait a minute. That's not what it's called. It is the beginner's tee box. That's what it should be called. I don't know how it ever got to become the women's tee box. It should be the beginner's tee box. That's what they should call it. That's a sexist term when we're saying this, the women's tee box. But you really, and this would be another way of being wrong, but you really should say, you could say the older people should be hitting from there. Well, now you're being discriminatory.
Yeah.
But you're not when you say women's tee box?
Ageist.
Where are we drawing the... You're ageist. You know, well, where are we drawing the line here? We can sit here and be sexist, but we can't be ageist. Okay, whatever. So... You're right. That was another comment Kenny Smith said. He just like tripled down on everything.
Yeah, he
came across a complete pig to me.
He just went in hard. And I'm like, what are we doing here, dude?
And I didn't think he was like that. So.
No, it was a bad look.
It was a horrible look. Horrible look. I'm guessing he's getting talked to today.
We hope.
He got ripped on social media, and deservingly so. Now, there's another guy that got ripped about social media, which we'll get to in a moment. So anyway, the NBA, Damian Lillard won the three-point contest. Mac McClung won the dunk contest. The judging was atrocious in that competition.
So bad.
It was like they were trying to give Jaylen Brown the win because he's the first All-Star in 6 years to participate. And then the All-Star game yesterday was just flat out. You could have pickup you could have pickup basketball games outside the radio station that would be more competitive. Or at your local park or your local YMCA or fitness center. It was a joke. It's pathetic. They got rid of the Elam ending, which I thought was the one good thing they had put into it. They went back to the old format. They didn't know the drafting of teams. It was just East-West, which I don't really care about that. But I thought the Elam ending at least made them play a little bit harder towards the end. And it prevented from somebody scoring 200 points. And yes, the NBA All-Star game, 211 to 186. The East beat the West. That's a record for points in the game, obviously. And Lillard got 11 threes with no defense, scored 39 points and won the MVP, even though Karl Anthony Towns had 50, which was the worst 50 you could ever see in a game. He was 2 of 10 from 3. Luka Doncic threw a 75-foot heave with 34 seconds to go in a quarter, and then on Twitter said it was a 2-for-1. It's a mockery of the game is what it is.
It is.
And nobody played defense. It's a joke. And I don't know why anybody pays any money to see that game at all. And what's really bad, it's in Indianapolis. They love basketball there. I know. I've been there before. I've been in that arena before. And it was just Larry Bird said earlier in the day, he says, I want everybody to play hard tonight. You know, they said, what do you want to see in the All-Star game? He goes, I want people to compete. That ain't going to happen. This is what the NBA has become. The NBA has become... And in some professional sports, I think a lot of people would agree, although I'll come across as an old fuddy-duddy here. And you bring up other people. You know, you bring up, well, you know, Jordan didn't sit out back-to-back games. Jordan played hard in the All-Star game. He didn't play hard all the time, by the way, but he did play. They got competitive in the fourth quarter because they were trying to win. Now they don't care who wins anymore. They kind of did there for a while with the Elam ending, and then they took that away, so whatever. But when you've got... When you've got NBA players that are whining about playing back-to-back nights, when you got NBA players that sit out when they're not even hurt, when you got NBA players bitching and bellyaching about we have to play 65 out of 82 to be eligible for an award, which is only 78% of the games. So think about that for a second. Ladies and gentlemen, how much vacation time do you get at your job? What do you get? A couple weeks a year probably? So you get 52 weeks, you get 2 weeks off, so not even 10%. These guys want 22% of the time off at minimum. But they really want more than that. So they're eligible for awards that they really don't earn because they don't play enough. At the same time, they're getting paid, in Jaylen Brown's circumstance, as he said, I think it should be 58 games. I think 65 is too high in the amount you have to play. Jaylen Brown's getting paid $286 million. To play basketball. But asking you to play 65 out of 82 games is too much. Comes across poor again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The NBA has become a soft league. And Adam Silver talks about, oh, I'm really happy with the NBA. Really? You're happy with high-scoring games with no defense? You're happy when Luka scores 70 and a regular season game looks like an exhibition game? The NBA is almost impossible to watch right now. Do you know there was 168 threes? Let me repeat this. 168 three-pointers were attempted in the All-Star game yesterday. And with no defense, this is how great these players are. With no defense, one of those teams shot 35% for three, despite all the wide-open threes. Only 35%.
Yeah.
And we're going to tell Sabrina Ionescu to step up closer to the line? Maybe the men should have to move the line in. It was atrocious. It's a joke. People should ask for their money back. The NBA is become soft. It's super soft. You've got players that won't play back-to-back nights. You've got teams that invested so much money, they're worried about breaking their porcelain doll, I guess. There's the doll to throw in there to tie this all together. You've got people paying tons of money to see somebody play in their town and then find out at the last minute they're not going to play because their toe hurts. They have an owie. And on top of that, these guys are getting paid so much money, it makes your head spin. Listen, I think a lot of people, I'm going to tell you right now, and you could argue that you could apply this to all professional sports, but I think if there's ever a sport you can really apply this to, out of all the professional sports, I don't think hockey it really applies to. The NFL, I really don't think it applies to. Baseball, a little bit, but they do play 162 games, and they play, you know, 10 games in 10 days. So I understand occasionally have a game off. Now, I don't think Bobby Witt Jr., needs a day off on a Sunday when they're traveling on Monday and not playing? Because I was pissed off about that when we went on a Royals bus trip a couple years ago. That was ridiculous. You take him away. Like, you're going to rest him. Rest him in the first game of a road trip in Arizona instead of for the hometown fans. So, but I do understand you might need an occasional rest as a baseball player. I do get that a little bit. At least, now if you're a DH, you don't need a day off, for crying out loud. But if you're playing every day at shortstop, second base, catcher in particular, yeah, I think you need a day off. I get it. I do. It's a longer season in regards to the games. But the NBA, they don't play back-to-backs all the time. And I know they have a kind of a irregular travel schedule, so forth and so on. I do get that, although they are flying in pretty nice planes. And they're getting fed very well. And it's served on gold plated dishes. I don't know that for sure, but it's just a guess. And then these guys are complaining about how many games they have to play in order to be eligible for an award. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I know it's a job. I hope you love your job as an NBA player. I understand you might not love it, and it is just a job because you're good at it. But you're asking for 22% of your time working off, and now you're wanting more than that to be eligible for an award. You don't like playing back-to-back nights, but God forbid people work 7-day work weeks in this society. And oh yeah, by the way, you don't play a 12-month season! You have time to go to your mansion and go to the beach for a month straight if you want, or 2 months straight. The NBA season starts in what? November, preseason, October, ends in June. You have July, August, September. You have 3 months off for playing any games. You know, teachers have that time off too, a couple months during the summer. Do they ask for a load management day? Well, I've worked 5 days in a row. I've worked 4 weeks in a row. Shall I get my fifth week off? What do you think? Can I go to the school board and ask for that? Oh, boy, I've worked 3 days in a row, and it's been hell at school. These kids are hellions. I need Thursday off. Well, you could take a sick day, or you can take a vacation day, but eventually when you exhaust all those days, guess what happens? You start to get docked on your paycheck.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's what the NBA should do and every professional sport should do. Okay? And it's never easy, but here's what I would say. And this is the hard thing to prove. But if you don't have a legitimate injury and you don't play, you get docked that paycheck. If you didn't play, you don't deserve it. You didn't play. Now, if you're sick, you're sick. Let's prove it. Let's have the thermometer. Let's have the puke. Whatever you need, let's prove it. Okay, let's have the team doctor say, okay, he's got a bone bruise on his knee, and it is significant enough. He probably should sit out. Okay, you still get paid because the doctor claimed you to be best to not play. But this load management stuff, you shouldn't get paid for it. I mean, you shouldn't. What are we? Is this built-in vacation time in the middle of a season? And now you've got the All-Star game where they can't even play hard for the fans that pay good money to see it. It is embarrassing. And I would say if you really want to make a statement, just like anything else in the world today, you have to unite. And here's if you want, and there's much bigger things to worry about than the NBA All-Star game. I grant you that. But in this case, since it's a sports talk show, you want to make your presence felt as a fan and you're unhappy, get people to boycott the All-Star game. Get people to boycott. And I'm not talking about being there because it's pretty much for the rich celebs that are there. And it's very quiet, by the way. Like the Super Bowl, you could feel it wasn't nearly as loud as normal. It's a whole bunch of corporate people and celebs sitting on their hands. It's not the real fans that can afford to go to these things, which is unfortunate. The biggest sporting events of all time now have priced out the regular Joe Schmo and Jane Doe. So if you really want to make an impact on the NBA and really think that the players are spoiled and coddled and you think they're soft, quit watching it. Don't go to the games during the regular season. Don't go to the playoff games. Quit watching on television. And that's your boycott. And you got to get a whole bunch of people to do it. And once the ratings go down, guess what happens? Your TV deal goes down. TV deal goes down. Salaries come down. Now, will that change load management and players sitting things out? I think it's kind of the same thing as what we see in college football now with players opting out of bowl games. We said it way back when Leonard Fournette did it. We said it when Christian McCaffrey did it, that once the genie's out of the bottle, you ain't putting it back in. And that's what we've seen in college football now. And I would be willing to bet you're going to see it in college basketball at some point, too. And I think in a roundabout way, you've seen it a little bit. I saw Kelly Oubre not try for a loose ball in an NCAA tournament game against Wichita State. You know why? Because he was worried about getting hurt because he was going to get a payday and going to be a first-round draft pick. So that was a roundabout way of not really going all out. But now the All-Star game has gone to this. You know, the NFL Pro Bowl, they don't hit anymore, so they went to flag football. I have no problem with that. You know, that's fine. Go ahead and do that. It's not like a lot of people watching that game anyway. The NBA, just have a whole bunch of skill competitions. Let's not screw around messing with a game that isn't even a game. I mean, 3-on-3 at the local park is way better watching that. Guys trying than this stuff. So let's go ahead and come up with more. Let's have next year. Somebody said this, and I thought it's a great idea. In the three-point contest next year, instead of having 8 NBA players, let's have 4 WNBA women and 4 NBA men.
Uh-huh.
And let the women shoot with the women's ball, the men shoot with the men's ball, and keep it at the NBA line. I know Kenny Smith won't like it. Or if the women want to shoot with the regular men's ball or the men want to shoot with the women's ball, that's fine too. I'm cool with it if they're all cool with it. Instead of just giving one WNBA player a chance to have that platform, which was cool, next year let's have 4 WNBA women shooting in the three-point contest against 4 NBA men. Okay? And if you're the NBA, you say, Steph Curry, you have to be one of them. And WNBA, if Caitlin Clark doesn't come back for another year, and Caitlin Clark can come back for another year. She's got a COVID year. But if Caitlin Clark goes up WNBA next year, you say to Caitlin Clark, you must do this. This is required. Caitlin Clark, you must do this. Steph Curry, you must do this. That's our marquee two people. Then you probably go to Sabrina Nescu and say, hey, would you do it again? I guarantee you she would. And you get 2 other women. You get 4 women to shoot WNBA. And you got 4 men. Or if you want to make it bigger, 8. Keep the 8 NBA guys and 8 WNBA people, right? And go ahead and have a contest cross-promoting to WNBA and women's sports, and you could eliminate the dunk contest. Or if you're going to have a dunk contest, you got to change something. And one of the things people said is, we need all-stars for a dunk contest. I don't think you have to. It would help, but I don't think you have to. Jaylen Brown was, and he was horrible at it. So what the problem is, we've seen everything.
Yeah.
What else is there left to see for a dunking standpoint? These guys are amazingly athletic, but there's not much left to see. And I understand, and one thing I would agree with Kenny Smith is that an unbelievable dunk creates more excitement in that arena than a great three-point performance. I do agree with him on that.
Yeah.
It is a little bit more electric. But when you got to get 2 of the 4 competitors to be from the G League to compete in this thing, and McClung is in the G League last 2 years and won it both times, I don't think that bodes well for your NBA players. But we want to see a show is the point. We want to be entertained. The slam dunk contest was not entertaining. And so either you got to come up with, I don't know, lower the goal and make it even more interesting, raise the goal to make it harder. Maybe that's what you need to do. If you can go 11 feet, they're jumping high and hitting their head on the rim anyway. Maybe that's what you got to do now. Make it 11 feet high. I don't know what you do to make the dunk contest better, but there are so many things you could do. You could have all kinds of competitions, tons of competitions. There's so many different drills we do in practice in fourth grade, for crying out loud. You could have competitions on all kinds of drill work, and you could eliminate the All-Star game because the game itself is a complete and utter waste of time.
I honestly didn't pay a lot of attention to the All-Star leading up to it. I think on Thursday is when I realized the All-Star game was this weekend, right? So I did not know until, like, afternoon Sunday that they got rid of the Elam ending, because I was scrolling through Twitter and somebody had said that, and I'm like, well, I have absolutely no reason I need to watch even a second of this All-Star game, because without an Elam ending, I know exactly how that's going to go.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's going to try to get to 200, and they probably will, because there won't be any defense, and that's exactly what it was. And so I had it on my TV because I wanted to see when it was going to get over to give me the right time to come out here and finish up a sportscast for this morning, right? Like, that's literally the only reason it was on my TV. I watched maybe a minute and 30 seconds of it just in passing, right? And I'm like, there's no need to watch this. It's not a game. It's just All-Stars out there just messing around. And I think it's a waste of time for a lot of people. It's a waste of money if you spent that as an actual fan to go there. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I think the problem with the NBA right now is something that we've said is actually a good thing for the NBA is the way they market their players, mm-hmm. right? And the way they're the forefront of what they're doing. We're not looking at teams being like the Chiefs are the team, right? Yeah, yeah. Like in the NBA, the Warriors were the team, but they were marketing Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and mm-hmm. things like that, and LeBron and Cleveland, right? Miami, they were marketing those guys so well. And so that it's not a problem for the NBA because they're selling the tickets, but it's a problem for the regular fan, I think, because sure. they are selling those tickets to the All-Star game when these celebrities want to go and be a part of it, right. and so they'll still fill up that arena. And I agree. I think you just need to stop watching it, but I don't think for an All-Star game that's going to put a lot of dent into things with the
you
way
have to
they
do it the whole regular season.
If it's the NBA Finals and you don't watch it, that's yeah. going to put a dent into right. it, right? It's like the Pro Bowl, right? They spend all this money and do it in the NFL. Not a lot of people are watching that, I don't think, no. but they're not going to get rid of it because it's still right. a moneymaker right. and it's still good for, you know, the economies of people that actually go to those events. And I think it's just a kind of a different scenario. But yeah, the Saturday night thing, the Steph Curry, Sabrina Ionescu thing was the only thing that saved that for me.
Was dampened the 3-point by
shootout.
Kenny
yeah,
Smith.
Exactly. The 3-point shootout was fun because a lot of different guys right. had the same score and tied, and yeah. it was fun to see them how they'd shoot it out and mm-hmm. win it. But the dunk contest was horrid, and if the judges were very horrid. And
one's a former K-Stater, Mitch Richmond was
yeah,
on that.
Yeah, and they're giving a high score to Jaylen Brown for just making a dunk and then covering his eyes like D. Brown after he made the dunk.
Way after.
Like, what are we doing?
That was pretty bad.
It didn't make any sense. I long for the days of the All-Star games in the 90s, man. Like, I loved watching those. I just, in my mind, like, you asked me about All-Star games, and I think of Magic Johnson coming back, you know, mm-hmm. and playing in the All-Star game and getting MVP when he wasn't even supposed to be playing. Mm-hmm. I think of one of them that I really think of is Glenn Rice and his home gym in Charlotte mm-hmm. just lit up in the second half and won the MVP, and it was a good game. Mm-hmm. Like, they're playing hard at the end of it. And also, I long for an afternoon friggin' All-Star game that I'm not yeah. here until 10:30 at night.
That was another
before
thing
it gets
said.
Over. That's what I loved about the All-Star game in the 90s.
That's what they were
this
saying.
Is an afternoon game.
The NBA says they want to promote the younger people and so forth and so on, and it started at 9:15 Eastern.
Yeah.
That's not really conducive to get your young people to watch.
No.
It's not very smart. So, anyway, it was not a great All-Star weekend at all for the NBA, in my opinion. And that's, it is what it is, I guess. Now, one more thing about the sexist comments. And this is not really a sexist comment, per se, by this person. But it did get as much heat as Kenny Smith got for his sexist comments the other night. Jay Williams played at Duke. Let me preface this, okay? Let me stress this. Jay Williams played at Duke, okay? Jay Williams is a commentator for ESPN, and I have no problem with him as a commentator. I have no problem with him. I really enjoyed watching him play as a player. There's one team that I hate in college sports, and it's Duke. Sorry. Hate's a strong word, but I do. I hate him. I was asked by my youngest, do you ever cheer for Duke? I said, hell no. I said, I don't care who they're playing. What if it would help your team? I said, don't care. I'll cheer for the other team to lose, but not cheer for them to win. Much like he was cheering for the Niners to lose and not the Chiefs to win, because he's a Seahawks fan, okay? I said, I use the same logic. So Jay, you know, you ask all these people, which it's like, why do we care about what these people think anyway, about Caitlin Clark. And Jay Williams said, she's an unbelievable talent, she's got all these numbers scoring, but to me, she's not great until she wins a championship. And then he doubled down and looked even dumber when he said, Deanna Taurasi won 3 titles at UConn. Breanna Stewart won 4 titles at UConn. This just in, UConn's been really good for a long period of time, and they get more than one McDonald's All-American to play for Gino Auriemma. So he goes on and he says this stuff, and he says that she has to win a championship. And I'm sitting there going, so basically what you're saying is she has to go to UConn. He got ripped for this by tons of people, and he should have, because his logic is insanely stupid. Okay, so let's go ahead and break down how dumb it is. First of all, Caitlin Clark stayed or went to Iowa, and Iowa's on the map because Iowa women's basketball is on the map because of Caitlin Clark.
Yes.
Jay Williams' name and why he's a broadcaster and why he's on the map is because of Duke. You see the difference?
Yes.
Caitlin Clark chose to build something instead of go join everybody like Kevin Durant did. Okay? Jackie Stiles was recruited by UConn, could have went to UConn. People said she was nuts for going to Southwest Missouri State. She took him all the way to Final Four, but I'm sure Jay Williams thinks she wasn't great. She was the all-time leading scorer in college basketball, and she came from a small town in Kansas, and she wasn't great, even though she led a team that had no business being in a Final Four to a Final Four, which to me is way more impressive than UConn winning another national title. So let's give you another reason why it's insanely stupid what he said. He says that Caitlin Clark has to win a championship. Well, last year she took him to the championship. She upset South Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, Iowa's on the map because of Caitlin Clark. Jay Williams wouldn't know anything about Iowa women's basketball if it wasn't for Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark is the all-time leading scorer in women's basketball history, according to the NCAA. She will pass Lynette Woodard for the all-time women's scoring mark, and she will probably pass Pistol Pete Maravich for the most points ever by a man or woman in NCAA basketball history. But she's not great, Dusty, until she wins a championship. And so, what Jay Williams is saying, ladies and gentlemen, if he wants to be consistent with his argument, and I would like to see Jay Williams go back on the air today, and I would like for him to say these names in any particular order, and I want him to say the same thing he said about Caitlin Clark, except put in a different name. It's a fun exercise. Shall we play? Carl Malone is not great until he wins a championship. John Stockton is not great until he wins a championship. Dan Marino is not great until he wins a championship. Patrick Ewing is not great until he wins a championship. Charles Barkley is not great until he wins a championship. I could keep going. There are a lot of dumb things that are said by people in front of a microphone nowadays, a lot of political ones in particular, that flat out say one thing, and then all you got to do is pull up a quick clip of what they said the day before, and it's completely different. But to say that Caitlin Clark is not great is one of the most baffling, stupefying, dumbest comments ever uttered on sports television in the history of sports television. And the reasoning is she hasn't won a championship. And he uses only two examples who went to the same school that's won tons of championships. So you could argue it's easier to win championships at UConn, isn't it? When you have McDonald's Americans rounding out your lineup. Stop. Jay Williams, what you did is the same thing that Kenny Smith did. And that is you exposed yourself to not knowing what the hell you're talking about. Don't talk about women's basketball when you know nothing about it. Kenny Smith, don't talk about women's and men's golf tees when you don't know what you're talking about. Do not talk about a woman needs to be at the women's three-point line and the three-point competition when you clearly haven't watched New York Liberty play WNBA basketball, when Inescu in games is shooting from 26 feet well beyond the three-point line and draining threes. What you do here, Kenny Smith and Jay Williams, you have a lot of things in common. First of all, you were really good players. Okay, you won championships. Kenny Smith was not a Hall of Famer. Kenny Smith was not a great player. He was a really good player. He also he was benefited by playing on a team with Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler. Right? Pretty impressive stuff. Does Caitlin Clark have Hakeem Olajuwon or Clyde Drexler?
No.
Jay Williams won championships at Duke with Coach K as his coach, and he had guys like Shane Battier and a whole bunch of NBA first-round picks. Does Caitlin Clark have that?
No.
The answer is no. Jay Williams, guess what? You weren't great either. You know why you weren't great? You were in the NBA. You didn't win an NBA title. Well, but I won a champion. I won at Duke. Well, Caitlin Clark's won Big Ten conference championships. Caitlin Clark, maybe she won a state title as a high school player. I don't know. I haven't gone that far back. See, here's the thing. When you ask people their opinion on something that they know nothing about, part of this is on the network as well.
Absolutely.
And I will go across the board here. First of all, a woman should be in Kenny Smith's seat when it's Sabrina Ionescu against Steph Curry. So you're putting them in a position. You would hope Kenny Smith be smart enough not to say all those things, but you know he did. When you're asking Jay Williams about Caitlin Clark, what you should first ask him is how many games of Caitlin Clark has he watched before you ask his opinion.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you nobody asks those things on ESPN. They just say, everybody on the panel, what do you think about Caitlin Clark? Same thing applies to CBS. When Charles Barkley can't get a name right with a college basketball star player, or when Kenny Smith gets his teams mixed up, that is on them because they did not prepare properly and not taking it seriously enough. And I like both of them, but stay in your lane, and that's the NBA. But to their no fault of their own, if CBS is insisting that they be on their studio show and to pay them extra money, why would they say no? But CBS is setting them up for failure because they're asking a whole bunch of NBA guys to be experts on college basketball. It would be the same thing as asking college basketball guys to be the experts on the NBA. There's not too many people that are experts on both. There's not a lot of people that are experts at multiple things in life, okay? Dusty and I could say that we're experts on play-by-play broadcasting, but are we experts on being a local car salesman? Nope. I'm not. You're not.
Yeah.
We can be an expert on maybe one particular thing, maybe a couple of things. It might be a lot of things that we are knowledgeable about, but in regards to really knowing what we're talking about, we all have our niche. Or as a friend of mine says, it's pronounced niche, which I still think might be the right way to say it. But everybody I know says it niche. Why do we care Jay Williams says something that stupid? Because he has a platform. And there are people out there that are, believe it or not, silly enough to believe he's right. And that's no different than what you're dealing with in politics, too. It's the way society is. Well, he has a microphone. He must be really smart, knows what he's talking about. No, the network could put an idiot behind a microphone and let him spew. That doesn't mean that person's smart.
No, not at all. And what's funny about it, like, I'm going to give it like a kind of a comparison there. So you're talking about Jay Williams because you're asking him because he played basketball, right?
But he didn't play women's basketball.
You know, one thing that you just said is like you and I can be experts on play-by-play, but we can stretch that out and say we're not experts on all play-by-play.
I can't
do wrestling play-by-play.
Yeah.
Like I know the rules and stuff, but I would have to really study it and focus it and craft it
right
for me to go do a wrestling play-by-play right now today. Right. And I consider myself a pretty good play-by-play guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so you know, and you as well. We both won awards for our play-by-play from the KAB, right? Like, and so it's like when you look at that and you say, yeah, I can be an expert on, but I also am not ignorant enough to just say I'm an expert on everything involved in play-by-play in every sport, right? I'm not trying to go do soccer play-by-play,
right?
Or wrestling play-by-play, or field hockey, or whatever it might be, right? Hockey. I would learn it if I took the time to perfect it. I would do it, but right now today, I'm not doing play-by-play for multiple sports, right? And so we can sit here and say you're an expert. And one of the things that I always like to do too is like when we're on this show and you bring something up. If you're asking about a general thing about something that happened in one single game, right, and you'll ask, did you watch this? Or you might not even ask me if I watched it. But I will just be like, I can't really comment on it. I didn't see it.
Right.
It's not that hard to do, right?
A lot of people
comment.
Don't
I don't
do
know
that.
Enough about it. I'm mm-hmm. not going to talk about it. I'm like, right. I'm going to have to take your word for it because I didn't see it.
Right.
But I will give my opinion on something that might have been similar to the matter that I did see and can compare and see if it jives, right? Now, if it's just a general thing about how a team's playing, no, I have not maybe not watched every game, but I know who the team is and what it's about, and I can make comments. But if I don't know something, I'm going to sit here and act like I do, and I've said that multiple times mm-hmm. on this show. I can't really speak on it because I don't know what happened. How hard is it? I can't speak on it because I don't watch Iowa women's basketball.
But these guys are paid to talk anytime they ask a question.
Exactly.
But you could handle this ahead of time and say, this is where Jay Williams could say, listen, I really don't want to comment on that because I don't know enough to say anything. And maybe that's what they did, and they still put him on the spot.
Yeah.
Who knows? But that's a good comparison you got. Like, that'd be like we do basketball and football a lot, play-by-play. And then suddenly we act like we're an expert on wrestling play-by-play when we've never done wrestling play-by-play.
Yeah.
Well, what do we know about wrestling play-by-play? Just because we're an announcer, we're an expert on everything that's announced? No, we're not. Just because Jay Williams played basketball in college and NBA doesn't mean he's an expert on the WNBA or college women's hoops.
Yeah.
And he proved it, as did Kenny Smith.
Yes.
And those two need to get together and apparently drink more so they can say even dumber things, which there's not much dumber than I'd be pretty dumb. I'm using the word dumb a lot today, but it applies
yeah.
to these horrible things. Are there worse things? Yes, but these were... You know, it seems to be... And think about it. Those are two men that are downplaying women's accomplishments.
Absolutely, they are.
They both come across as super sexist. Some people could argue racist with Jay Williams because he's black and Caitlin Clark's white. Somebody said, if Caitlin Clark's black, is he saying the same thing? I don't know. I'm not saying it's racist. I'm just saying some people have said it could be. I don't know. I will say this. To me, their comments, definitely Kenny Smith's, are sexist. At minimum. Okay.
Yes.
Daytona 500 scheduled yesterday has been moved to today due to the rain in Daytona over the weekend. And there'll be a doubleheader on the track today. The Xfinity race starting already at 10. And then the Daytona 500 green flag goes up at 3 on Fox today. All right. We end the show with this. And this is something that was spurred by Dusty. He brought it up after the show the other day. You know, we were talking about Mahomes and Brady, and a lot of people talking about who's the GOAT, which it's kind of silly to me because Mahomes has many more years to go, hopefully, God willing, health-wise. So he's just maybe in the beginning chapters of his book that he's going to write. Brady's book is done. It is written, okay? Is Mahomes the best quarterback in the first 6 years as a starter in NFL history? There's no question about that. Anybody argues that, you're just denying facts, okay? Now, if you want to argue Brady's still the GOAT of all time over the course of a career, I'm not going to deny that or argue with you either because he is because he's done. His career's over. Mahomes is not over. So it's an incomplete – it's like comparing a kid's homework that's finished to somebody's that's halfway done. What's the point? There hasn't been graded yet. Okay, we know that Tom got an A, but we don't know what Mahomes' career is going to end up. Will it be an A or A+? I don't know. But there is – when we're talking about the greatest of all time conversations, we can waste a lot of time doing this, and it's fool's gold to an extent. You're never going to change somebody's opinion on this. But Dusty brought this up the other day, and this would be a much better argument that should be being talked about by the national pundits, more so about this than Mahomes versus Brady. Because Andy Reid is much closer to the end of his career, you would think.
Yeah.
Than Patrick Mahomes. Mike Florio thought he was going to retire this year. And he had nothing to base that off of. I can almost assure you he made that up. Once again, no consequences for crappy journalism, if you want to call it that. So Dusty asked the other day, he said, you know, if Andy Reid keeps going the way he is, he's going to have to be considered in the GOAT conversation of all time in regards to head coaches in NFL history. And I'm like, you know what? That's really a good point. So that motivated me to do some research. So I put on the tease on social media about could Andy Reid, once again, the key word could, some people don't read the whole thing, could Andy Reid end up being the GOAT?
Could and end up are two key parts of that sentence.
Right. Now, our good buddy Todd is a Dolphins fan, so he's going to come dun, 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 riding in on his horse to defend the Dolphins at all costs because he's got nothing else to cheer about right now. The Dolphins can't do anything nowadays, and they definitely can't play in cold weather. So he says Don Shula. Now, if you're going to go off of one thing, and that is overall wins of a head coach in NFL history, Don Shula is number one. Who's the all-time, well, of course, Brady does have all the numbers when it comes to yards and all this other stuff, right? I think he has everything. So it's kind of hard to deny. Like, if Brady was number one in rings, but he was, like, eighth all-time in touchdown passes, you know, you could see and go, well, Dan Marino was a better quarterback than Brady. He had no rings, but he had way better stats.
Yeah.
But that's not a fair comparison at all. So I did some research on this.
Bill Belichick has won the most Super Bowls as a head coach. He has 6. Do you know there's only 4 other coaches that have won 3 or more now in NFL history? Chuck Knoll, 4 with the Steelers. Bill Walsh, 3 with the Niners. Joe Gibbs, 3 with the Redskins. Andy Reid now has 3. How many Super Bowls did Don Shula win?
2.
2. 2. 2. And back-to-back years, 72 and 73. Well, Don Shula went back-to-back. Yes, and so did Andy Reid. One of 7 coaches. Andy Reid is now one of 7 coaches to win back-to-back Super Bowls. Only 7 in the history of the NFL have won back-to-back Super Bowls. Bill Belichick, Don Shula, Chuck Knoll, Jimmy Johnson, Mike Shanahan, Vince Lombardi, and now Andy Reid. Of the coaches with 3 or more Super Bowl rings, only Belichick, Andy Reid, and Chuck Knoll have 3 rings and back-to-back Super Bowl championships. They're the only 3. Shula doesn't have 3 rings, so he's not in this conversation. Belichick, Reid, and Knoll all have 3 or more Super Bowl rings. They have back-to-back titles as well. Belichick did it in 03-04. Knoll did it twice, 74-75, 78-79. Most Super Bowl appearances for a head coach. Bill Belichick has 9. He's 6-3 in those Super Bowls. Don Shula had 6. But he was only 2-4 in Super Bowls. Tom Landry, 5. He was 2-3 in Super Bowls. Andy Reid has 5. So he's tied for 3rd Super Bowl appearances. Reid with 5. He's 3-2. So he has 1 less Super Bowl appearance than Don Shula, but already has one more win. Now, based on the Brady versus Mahomes comparisons, that means Reid is greater than Shula.
Yes.
So if Reid is greater than Shula, then there's only one guy for Andy Reid to catch, and that would be
Bill Belichick.
Huh, interesting. Mahomes is chasing the dynasty of Brady, and Reid would be chasing the dynasty of Bill Belichick. That's really what we have now. We have come to the point, if you really look at all the numbers, and you can, once again, you can rationalize anything you want to make your argument, and I'm not going to change your opinion. But here's what the numbers prove. The numbers prove that the best coach in NFL history, based on winning championships, is Bill Belichick. He is the best. He's won 6. Nobody else has more than 4. Bill Belichick is number 1, okay? If you're talking of taking in the Super Bowls, the Super Bowl appearances, playoff wins, everything else, you can take it into consideration, then really there's only 2 people to discuss for the GOAT as a head coach, and that is Bill Belichick and now Andy Reid. There's nobody else that fits that criteria. I will back that up here in a moment. So what we're coming down to now is the 2 greatest organizations maybe in NFL history, and based off of the amount of winning in the period of time. Now, the Cowboys and the Steelers had some great runs, no doubt about it. And the Chiefs are still in the middle of theirs. They could still add to theirs. But when we're talking about the greatest of all time quarterback-wise, right now it's pretty much nobody's mentioning anybody else except Brady and Mahomes. Nobody's mentioned Peyton Manning anymore.
No.
Nobody's talking about Dan Marino, John Elway, or Brett Favre, or Aaron Rodgers. They're only talking about 2 guys. When we're talking about coaches, what I'm arguing is we should really start to be saying there's only 2 guys. And that's Bill Belichick and Andy Reid. Let me back this up. Andy Reid is the first coach in NFL history to lead 2 different teams to at least 4 consecutive conference championship games. Let me repeat that! It's hard for a coach to go to 4 straight conference title games with once in their career. He's done it twice with 2 different organizations in 2 different conferences. Reid is the only head coach in NFL history who has won 100 games with 2 different franchises. Isn't that worth something? Reid now has the 2nd most total conference championship game appearances as a head coach. 11. He only trails Bill Belichick, who had 13. He's getting closer, isn't he?
Uh-huh.
Reid has the 2nd most playoff wins in NFL history. Who does he trail?
Bill Belichick.
Belichick has 31. Reid has 26. Shula, by the way, 19. So Reid's put him well in the rearview mirror. The 65-year-old head coach passed Dallas Cowboys Hall of Famer Tom Landry to be 2nd to only Bill Belichick in total conference championship appearances. Landry had 10, Reid now has 11, Belichick has 13, and he's unemployed this year. Most regular season wins in NFL history. Don Shula has 328, Jordan Hollis 318, Bill Belichick 302. Don't know if he's going to coach again or not. Andy Reid 258. So, if Andy Reid keeps winning 12 games a year, which he typically does, they won 11 this year, but usually 11 or 12, say 11, he's going to have to coach for four more years to get to 300. Will he catch Shula? I would say probably not. All right? I would say probably not regular season wins. Most combined wins, take the playoffs with the regular season. Shula has 347, Belichick 334 or 333, Hollis 324, Andy Reid 284. Andy Reid is fourth on the most combined list. He's fourth in most regular season wins. He is one of only five coaches to have at least three Super Bowl wins. Shula does not have that. Landry does not have that. No other coach can say, I've led two different teams to four consecutive conference championship games. By the way, Andy's been the sixth straight now with the Chiefs. No NFL coach can say, I've won 100 games with two different franchises. And only one coach can say that he has been or has won more playoff games than Andy Reid. Only one coach can say that. And Reid isn't done. See, there's the key again. Andy, I'm not sitting here telling you Andy Reid's the greatest coach of all time. That is not the purpose of this. The purpose of it is to go off the wording of what I said in the tease. Could Andy Reid end up being the greatest coach of all time? And the answer is, hell yeah.
Yeah, he definitely could.
It's not even close. That's not debatable. He could. Listen, he's got Patrick Mahomes. If Andy Reid coaches another 8 years, and Andy Reid gets three more rings, he would have as many rings as Belichick. He'll have more conference titles. He'll have more Super Bowl appearances or be tied there. And it'll be by far better than anything anybody else has done except for Belichick. And it will be a conversation amongst what? The same thing we talk with Brady and Mahomes. Two people. That's it. That's the only conversation we're having here with the GOAT. Okay? Could. As of now, do you put Shula near the top? Absolutely you do. Do you put Chuck Knoll up there? I would say you do. Mm-hmm. Do you still consider Tom Landry one hell of a coach? I would. Yes. To me, I would be Shula, Landry, Belichick, Hollis, and Reid, and Landry. That'd be my five or six. That's where I'd probably stop.
Yeah.
Bill Walsh was a great coach, but didn't have as much longevity. Andy Reid has 26 playoff wins. Three Super Bowl wins, three championships, obviously. Belichick's the only one that has, him and Knoll are the only ones that have more championships than Andy Reid. Chuck Knoll and Bill Belichick are the only ones that have more Super Bowl wins than Andy Reid. Those are the only two. Chuck Knoll won 16 playoff games, Reid's won 26. Reid's still going. So if Reid just gets one more ring, you can probably kick Knoll out of the conversation if you haven't already. So then we go back to the old saying again. How are you judging the GOAT? All right? Are you judging by rings? Well, then, like I've said before, Bill Russell should be the best player of all time if we're talking rings, not even Jordan or LeBron. If we're talking statistics, well, then we can start talking about Wilt Chamberlain, right? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, LeBron James. I mean, if we're talking just stats, numbers. Are we talking about overall wins and disregarding championships? Well, then, I don't know. Who's got the most wins all time in NBA? I don't know. Who has the most wins all time in Major League Baseball? I don't know. So whoever those are, they're the greatest. Like, what's the criteria? And for me, it's always been a combination of all of it. You can't sit here and say you're the greatest coach of all time if you haven't won anything. If you haven't won a Super Bowl, I've been close. No, you can't say you're the greatest of all time. All right? And I think that's what Jay Williams is trying to say with Caitlin Clark. Well, she's the greatest scorer of all time, but she can't be considered the greatest of all time if she doesn't win a championship. Once again, there's extenuating circumstances. But in the NFL, it's a pretty level playing field, all right? This is professional sports. College, the playing field's not nearly as equal. Obviously, UConn versus Iowa, not comparable over the years. It doesn't stay very consistent. But the NFL only has a set amount of teams. There's only so many coaches that have coached in this league over the years. There's only so many quarterbacks that played quarterback in the National Football League.
Andy Reid is one of the top five coaches of all time. And if anybody argues that right now, once again, doesn't want to observe any kind of factual information. Anybody with a brain knows that Andy Reid's one of the five greatest coaches of all time. Would you disagree?
No.
Okay. Now the question is, where does he end up?
Yeah.
So if he's in the top five, how many more years does he coach? If I'm him, if I'm healthy, as long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy and I'm healthy, and shoot, I might have some health issues. I'll fight through them. Why would I retire? That's why Mike Florio is such a dunce. Why would I retire if I have my health and I have 15 at quarterback? Why would I do that? There's a lot more wins on the horizon for Andy Reid, both in the regular season and in the playoffs. And you could argue there are more conference title games to be in, there are more Super Bowls to be in, and there's more Super Bowls to win. Don Shula's dead. He ain't going to get any more. Hate to be crass, but he's not getting any more, okay? George Halas ain't getting any more. Tom Landry's dead. He ain't going to get any more. The only guy on this whole list that can get anything anymore is Belichick, and that's a guy that's unemployed right now. So Andy Reid's the only active coach on this entire list that I have. There's nobody close to even gaining on him at all. It's Reid with nobody in the rearview mirror, can put the foot down on the car going down the highway, no cop chasing him, and he's just got to catch that guy named Belichick. Or if you want to throw Shula in there, or Chuck Knoll. There's only a few cars ahead of him. That's it. And once again, his book is not written. Now, I think most of the chapters are there, but there's a few chapters that are left. Shula is done. Chuck Knoll is done. You know, look at all these guys here. Curly Lambeau, yeah, no longer with us. Paul Brown, no longer with us, okay? Chuck Knoll, no longer with us. Marty Schottenheimer, bless his heart, passed away recently. Dan Reeves passed away recently. The most combined wins of coaches in National Football League history. I'll give you the list. Don Shula, Bill Belichick, George Halas, Andy Reid, Tom Landry, Curly Lambeau, Paul Brown, Chuck Knoll, Marty Schottenheimer, Dan Reeves, and only two of those 10 are still alive, and that's Andy Reid and Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Most regular season wins in NFL history. Don Shula 1, Halas 2, Belichick 3, Reid 4, Landry 5. Belichick and Reid are still alive. Most Super Bowls. Belichick 6, Knoll 4, Walsh, Gibbs, and Reid 3. Thank God Joe Gibbs still alive. But don't think he's coming back to getting Super Bowls anytime soon. He's busy with his racing stuff. And not only did and here's the thing that you will argue, they've talked about it. If Mahomes gets a three-peat, does that allow him not to have to get the seven rings to be the greatest of all time? And I think you could argue that. Devin McCourty, who played with Tom Brady, said that yesterday on a podcast. He said, listen, Tom Brady's got seven, and Tom Brady did beat Mahomes head-to-head. He said, so you can't forget that. That should not be ignored. But he did say, as a former Patriot and a Brady supporter, he said, if Mahomes gets three in a row, something Brady never did, nobody ever did, he said, I think that does cancel that out to where you can sit here and say, yeah, he's the greatest ever. If he gets to six and he has a three-peat and he's short of seven overall, yeah, I think you give it to him. That's coming from a Patriot guy.
Yeah.
Okay? Well, what about the greatest coach of all time? Andy Reid, if you're going to argue between Reid and Shula, Andy Reid has more rings and he went back-to-back. Well, Shula went back-to-back. So did Andy Reid. But if Andy Reid gets three in a row, okay, three championships in a row, and no NFL head coach has ever done that, just like no quarterback has ever won three in a row. If Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and the Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl next year and get a three-peat, couldn't you argue that Reid is the greatest of all time and Mahomes? Once their career's over, because of that three-peat, that differentiates absolutely them. They might not have six rings. He may not have six rings like Belichick, but Andy might have five and a three-peat. And Mahomes will have five or six and a three-peat. What do you think?
You can absolutely argue it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like you said, I was the one that kind of brought this up after the show on Friday, and I was like,
and
you
thanks a lot.
Really start thinking about that. Like, and it's like, there's only one other guy that's on that list that can claim that he did it with two teams, and that's Don Shula. Yep. You know, he won with Baltimore yep. before he went to Miami. Won a lot of games with Baltimore.
Yes, he did.
He went to Miami. Only made one Super Bowl. Didn't ever make the NFL championship game before making that Super Bowl, right? But he's the one guy that can argue that I did it with more than one team. Mm-hmm. Because Bill Belichick went 36-44 with the Cleveland Browns as their head coach.
He had one winning season, made the playoffs 1 year
yeah,
in Cleveland.
Yeah, one time. And so that's what's going into it for me when I brought that up, is you're talking about a dude that's been to 10 conference or 11 conference championship games and six with one, five with the other, right? Like you can't discredit the amount of wins he has in more than just one place. And that's going into it a lot for me of the discussion that I would have or what I would want to say. Now, he never won the big one in Philly, and that was always a knock on him, right? Well, he's put that to rest and put it to bed pretty easily now in Kansas City after winning three. And so that's when you start talking about those things. And then if you get the three-peat, it amplifies it. It boosts up a little bit your argument, obviously, if you want to say this guy is the best to ever do it. And one thing that we don't focus on, and I think we should more, is, you know, back when Don Shula and Chuck Knoll and Tom Landry were coaching, you built a team, and that was your team.
Yes.
And you were not playing 31 other teams in the league. Don Shula was not playing anywhere near that because he was in the NFL before a merger, right, with the Colts. And then the merger happens, and now you're playing against the rest of the teams. Tom Landry, a lot of his career, was not playing against the AFL, too. He was playing the NFL, which had, I don't know how many teams, 12? I don't know what it was, but a lot of those wins are coming, and you're building teams that you could just be better, right? If you have
you
a good
keep your
coach.
Players, and you, no salary
there's no
cap.
Free agency. There's no
free agency.
People aren't trading like they are now. And to do it like this in this age where free agency is everywhere, and you got to figure out a cap, and you got to figure out how to pay people. You got to have a GM that brings in the right mix of guys for your coaching style, mm-hmm. all of that stuff is something that we don't talk about enough, I don't think, when we talk about these arguments of who's the greatest of all time. Because it wasn't as difficult for Don Shula as it is for Andy Reid. I'm going to promise you that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they built the team, and he was a hell of a coach, and they won because of him.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with Andy Reid, but he's got to do it in a world where he doesn't know what team he's going to have from 1 year to the next. He's got to adjust guys year after year into different roles and try to win with that. And I get it. You know, not everybody stayed around on all those teams, but I mean, look at the Steelers. Every time they won, you were thinking of Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris, Lynn Swann, me, Joe Green. Like, all those guys.
Those guys weren't leaving.
It's Greasy, Zonk, and Mercury Morse. All those guys are in the same spot. They're not leaving because they're winning. Mm-hmm. And the money is not what it is now. Mm-hmm. And so they want to win. And I will say they probably played for different reasons back then and had more maybe of a love for the game back then of what football really is instead of getting tied up and caught up in the money. But to be able to do it at that rate consistently when you're getting new guys year in and year out that you have to win with, I think should be part of the discussion as well.
Well, you also lose coordinators. I mean, he had a new offensive coordinator this year. People want Nagy gone just about a month ago. Now they don't even say anything.
And there's more jobs.
And Bieniemy got fired
staff,
at the Commanders.
Yeah.
And you got different jobs, different people coming in. You change general managers. You had Dorsey. You went to Veach.
Yeah.
And Andy Reid's done it so well with two different franchises, two different conferences, completely different divisions, completely different ownership groups, completely different hierarchy. And he's won with a whole bunch of different quarterbacks. Now, it is true he had not won a ring until he got Patrick Mahomes. Well, Belichick didn't win a ring without Tom Brady.
Nobody wins anything without somebody.
Exactly. The coach can't play.
Discussions come all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, this has been a discussion in the NBA with Red Auerbach and Phil Jackson, too, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
And I think Greg Popovich would be part of that list now, too. Mm-hmm. But these are those discussions the same way, right?
Yeah.
Well, Phil never won anything. He won because of Michael and Kobe. Well, yeah, but they didn't win without him either.
That's exactly right. They were struggling, the Lakers, until they brought him in. And Jordan couldn't get over the top until Phil became the head coach. And there's a lot of people talking about, why would you let this guy be your head coach?
Yeah.
Doug Collins got forced out. By the way, Don Shula didn't have as many games during the regular season, so his win total could have been higher had they had more
And that's
games.
Another thing that needs to be factored in, mm-hmm. too, is like they're leaving wins on the table because they're not playing as many.
Right. But it doesn't change how many Super Bowls he was in.
Yeah, exactly.
Or how many that he won.
And that's why that can be an equalizer.
He did have less teams to compete against to win Super Bowls. That is a fact. It is. And that's why you get in trouble, I think, with comparing era to era. And I don't like the GOAT conversations per se. I do think they're kind of fascinating to break down, especially after you brought up Andy Reid. I started going through this Andy Reid. I'm like, wow. I mean, Andy's... it's top five without a doubt right now, mm-hmm. without a question. But as of a few years ago, everybody was like, Andy can't win the big one. He's a great coach, but he's Marty Schottenheimer Jr. He can't win the big one. He wins, he gets number one seed, but he can't do enough. And now you look at him and you're like, wow, this guy won with he got to an NFC championship game with his best receiver was Todd Pinkston. He won a Super Bowl back-to-back years after trading away the most electric player in the NFL in Tyreek Hill. He changes offensive coordinators, Super Bowl. One thing that he didn't change that kept going, is quarterbacks. He got to get past the Donovan McNabb and the Michael Vick, and then eventually you got Alex Smith, and now we hit the jackpot with Patrick Mahomes. But it is pretty amazing. I mean, no NFL coach has ever led two different teams to at least four consecutive conference title games. Andy Reid's done that with the Eagles and Chiefs. No head coach in the history of the NFL has won 100 games with two different franchises. Andy Reid is the only one. Only one coach has more championship game appearances, and that's Bill Belichick, who has 13, and Reid has 11. Only one coach has more playoff wins in NFL history. Belichick has 31. Reid has 26. He's six more than third place Tom Landry, seven more than Shula, and he's not done. And he's only one of five coaches to have three rings. The others are Gibbs, Walsh, Knoll, and Belichick. I mean, the proof's in the pudding on this one. Andy Reid is one of the best five coaches in the history of the National Football League. The question is, as I present at the very beginning, could he end up being the GOAT? And I don't think there's any doubt he could be. Now the question is, will he? Well, now we're predicting the future.
Yeah, and
if Mahomes goes down tomorrow in a car accident, it's probably not going to get there. But if Mahomes keeps playing like he has, yeah, Andy Reid's got a great chance. Now, what we don't factor in here is, what if Belichick comes out of gets the coach next year, the year after this year, and he wins a ring with some other franchise? Well, and then all of a sudden, well, Belichick, he's better than Reid because he won Super Bowls with Reid didn't win Super Bowls with two franchises. Belichick did.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what they argue with Brady. Well, Brady did it with two different franchises. That's even more impressive. Mahomes, he needs to go somewhere else in his career to get a seventh ring. It's like, no, he don't. But, well, I get it. I understand. We can argue till the cows come home. But it is interesting when you look at the numbers, how far Andy Reid has come in this conversation in just the last 5 years. Of course, it helps when you get Lombardis.
Absolutely.
Changes the tone ever so slightly.
Larry O's, Lombardis, Stanley Cups, the World Series trophies. When you win them, it helps the argument quite a bit.
How many more Super Bowls do you think Andy Reid will win as a head coach? If any.
And I hate these.
Because, I know. That's why I asked you.
Yeah. I'm going to say he'll get one more.
One more? How many more does Mahomes get?
Three.
Two with a different coach?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's...
which would help Mahomes' legacy a little
no
bit.
No thought went into either one of those answers.
That's something that would help Mahomes' legacy. If people were going to say, well, he didn't win Super Bowls with two different organizations like Brady did. Well, but Brady only won with two coaches.
Yeah.
Belichick and Arians. Mahomes would win. Let's see, Steve Spagnuolo becomes a head coach. And Mahomes wins a ring with Spags as a head coach. Or Matt Nagy, whoever it is. Well, you know, maybe that would cancel out the, I got to go to another place to win a ring.
Yeah.
There's always going to be those arguments no matter what. Because people are stuck in their stance. But I thought it was fascinating research I was able to put together today. Thanks to Dusty bringing it up the other day after the show. So, once again, playoff wins. Belichick has 31. Reid has 26. He could pass Belichick. Assuming Belichick doesn't come back to coach, Reid could pass Belichick two seasons from now. Easily could get three next year. Say they have home field. They get three next year. That means they win the Super Bowl. If they don't have home field and they get three, that means they make the Super Bowl. Okay?
Yeah.
So, based on his trajectory right now, two more years, he'll have, based on trajectory, they'll have a four-peat.
Yeah.
No, they, I don't think that's going to happen. But he could pass Belichick in career playoff wins within 2 or 3 years. And Andy, I think, is still, what is he, 65, 66? I mean, there's coaches that coach tell. Pete Carroll looks like he's 48. He looks younger than me. And he's 72, and he just got forced out. Belichick looks much older. He's actually younger than Pete Carroll. Did you know that?
Yeah.
So, and that's what happens when you win championships. You really age badly, I guess. But Andy Reid doesn't really seem to have aged very much during this whole process. And there's been a lot of stressful situations for him, including this season. So, you know, you worry about his weight a little bit, obviously. You know, is that going to cause some problems? But if Andy Reid can stay healthy, why can't he coach another 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, 65.
I'd say five.
And I'd say five, maybe to 70. Yeah. Maybe.
Definitely get a couple more in that time.
I was a little scared for the man when he went down on the ground and gave Chris Jones a hug after the Super Bowl, though. What are you doing, Andy?
I'm tackling my defensive tackle. That's what I'm doing. All right, so you guys can talk amongst yourselves at water cooler. I'm sure Todd's going to tell us how Don Shula is the greatest of all time now that he came into our studio with an unexpected appearance. Or maybe you'll just agree and say that the Chiefs are the greatest of all time. No. A lot of people still going to hold back on that.
Yeah. State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.